Welcome to Transformation Talks. My name is David Lancefield, and in these podcasts, my aim is to explore the topic of transformation through the lens of people who've driven, lived through, or studied transformation in their own ways. I'm delighted to speak with Tim Davey, CEO of BBC Studios, a member of the executive board of the BBC, chair of the Creative Industries Council, taking over from Nicola Mendelsohn of Facebook, chairman of Comic Relief, trustee of the Tate and of the Royal Television Society, father of three, an expert marathon runner. There you go.
Expert, I wouldn't go that far, but I've,
we'll come on
I've
to that.
Hauled myself around, yes.
Welcome. Thanks for your
time. Thank you very much, David. Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
So you've been appointed as the CEO of Studios. Brilliant. How do you feel? And what's your first move? What's the first thing you're thinking about doing? Because I know you're an action-focused guy. You want to get stuff done. How do you feel? What do you want to do?
The studio is a merger of BBC Worldwide, which is a decent-sized billion turnover business that was doing sales, distribution, channels. And we've merged it together with the BBC production businesses that make the traditionally only for the BBC productions. So everything from Strictly Come Dancing or Dancing with the Stars for the international listeners, to Doctor Who, to Blue Planet, all the makers of those programmes. So about 2,000 people, half a billion of turnover. Put that together with our business to form BBC Studios. I think when you come to a new enterprise, my thoughts are really on two really big things. One is that enterprise orientated to a growing market? Because actually, having been around the block a bit, it is quite exhausting when you set yourself up against a market that's moving. Is it a tailwind business, to use a bit of jargon, so apologies, but is it something where you're set up where the market will naturally drive growth? Yeah. The second thing is the other side of the fence, really, which is organizationally, what talent have you got to deliver what you want to deliver? And making assessment of the scale of cultural change that's needed to reorientate the operation and the speed at which you need to make that change.
I speak to some CEOs and some of them say, you know what, I just got stuck in and I started doing stuff and obviously had a sense of where you wanted to go. Others are very much, no, I needed to build a vision for the business, a strategy, and they were still doing things, but they wanted to build a picture. Where were you on the ends of that spectrum?
Unfortunately, I think I can't leap down either side because I do think you've got to spin both plates. And you know, we have done, when I've been in businesses and we've done the 100-day plans, the clarity of vision around, you know, where is this business going to be in 3 to 5 years? If you look at the research I've seen on whether people are happy and delivering is pretty straightforward. Is number one is, have they got a clear vision? I mean, it's all the old cliches, but have they got a clear vision of where they're heading? And do they believe in it? Which is the really important thing. Because I think a lot of people say the first thing, which is, have they got a clear vision? But do they believe in it? Are they on board and say, that is a stretching, achievable goal? So I think you do need to build that in a consensual manner with your senior team. That takes a little bit of time, but I would say at pace. Having said that, the thing I don't subscribe to is kind of that whole, we're going to wait and the strategy is going to merge so we can just kind of go into a state of affairs where there's not action. There's not wins on the book. Because my sense is strategy is only as good as the events. You know, it's only as good as the wins you put on the table. So we've also, in when we delivered, for instance, our 100-day plan, it did have those elements like clarity of strategy, communicate where we're going as a business. But it also said, what wins are we going to put on the board? You know, in our case, acquiring new businesses, winning commissions, transforming our business in a couple of markets. Because I think unless people see events, two things happen. One is they don't believe in the strategy itself. The second is they don't learn how to behave successfully. Do you see what I mean? So what they do is human beings will look at a strategy, they'll look at bits of paper, but really it comes to life when they behave in a way. I'll give you an example. The BBC has often talked about working across silos, you know, and constant workshops and this, that, and the other. Actually, it's a project like the Olympics where you say, we're going to look at it across the BBC. Yeah. We're going to do it on every element of our broadcast. We form a team together. We put actually an executive in charge of that. And, you know, every person came away saying, I got it. And by the way, I really enjoyed it. And that's always going to be part of what I am now. I was part of the team that put together
the 2012
Olympics.
Amazing thing.
You need those events.
You need those events.
And how do you
So you've started, you've worked out where you want to go, you've worked out the markets you want to tap into in terms of the demand. How do you sell it? Because worldwide in any organization, every organization, large ones have gone through transformations before. There's often a skepticism, often a fatigue, some people. How do you go about selling your ideas or selling your vision to either the execs around the table or the rest of the organization? What are the things you do?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I can't bring a lot of rocket science to this, I think, because you have to roll up your sleeves and do a few things. The first thing is, unless your top team is not committed personally, not just professionally, they're not nodding along, but they're truly seeing their personal fulfillment linked to what you want to do over the next 3 to 5 years, I think you're in real trouble. And so, you know, the first thing I do with a new senior team is not talk about the business, but talk about themselves. Where do they want, what's their story? Where are they? Is people at the end of the day talk a lot about the general of the business, but really in their, a lot of their minds and their emotions are really about what's happening to them.
Yeah.
Not in a selfish way, but yes. What is their story in this? So you have to really get quite deep into what individuals want to do. So the first thing I do is get the top team to do that. Yeah. Literally. And also the other thing is in teams.
You're going to be asking more of them and to give more of themselves.
Exactly.
So if you don't, otherwise you're going to be treating them like robots, right?
Exactly. And I think there's a real need to get insights. You know, but they are here. You know, people are here by choice. You know, as leaders, we're there to serve people as well. So I think actually there's a responsibility to get that team aligned. And also they need to hear that you are, at a very basic level, going to support them in that endeavour. Yeah. So I think you do, as a leader, need to set your own stall out. You need to be very clear about where you think the business is heading. But it is a collaborative, for the top 20, and I'm quite deliberate about this, it is a very collaborative process.
Yes.
So then you get down to your next level, which is, I think then you've got the, I mean, I work on actually four levels, so I don't want to get too complicated, but the top 20, then you've got the top 100 odd. Do you know the next level of leaders? In some organizations, you know, PwC's headcount significant. It might be your top 300. Do you see what I mean? But it's your next layer.
Yeah.
And these people are, they're people that have to carry the message on their own. You have to be able to trust them to walk into a room and say, look, there won't be a senior person around. You are the senior person. And I think they need involvement in the story before you communicate it more widely.
Yes.
They need to feel a level of involvement in it.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be faux about this. I think you don't want to kid them that the top 20 haven't got a view.
Yeah.
And I tend to say this is a lead hypothesis. Now knock it around and spend a lot of energy on how you would do it as opposed to kidding them that they can rewrite the whole strategy.
But
it's not a central, I don't like, you know, that mood of a central team with the CEO cooking up a strategy and it's all kind of bulletproof and it's all kind of black box.
And then you just push it out.
I like a porous process with the next level down. Mm. Next level after that is the management layer. So people who have still got, and by the way, I talked about what makes people happy, clear vision, good line manager. Because if you've got a CEO on video doing a nice speech and then your line manager, your group of 10 people, it just feels not completely disconnected. You've got a problem.
Yeah.
So that next level down needs, then I think bringing in before you go to general staff communication, the management layer. Mm. And that is more about, you know, communicating out.
Yes.
You want to hear views, but you are being very realistic. It's not a two-way process at that point. And then finally you're out with the staff. And the thing with the staff is, I think they need to hear directly from the leaders. They need to hear simultaneously from CEO all the way down. Yeah. And they need to be able to do input. Because very junior staff, the worst and most patronizing fault is to assume that they don't have smart ideas. And, you know, just because you're senior doesn't mean you necessarily have all the answers.
That's refreshing. It's very clear. It's a very clear sort of structure, and it takes time, right? And it takes patience. How do you temper
real
it? Because you're a guy who likes to get stuff done. How do you temper the need to not just bring people on board, but allowing them to have a meaningful contribution? Because that's slower than just being much more directive and saying,
I struggle with it personally because you just want to drive it straight through. If you're quite of a starter, you know, the kind of, I think the honest truth is you just have to hose yourself down and listen. And just say, right, I'm going to, the big prize here is over 2-3 years. It's not over the next 2 months. And you just have to calm down. And I just think experience says, you know, big change is made over, it's not made in days. And the other thing is, I think experience tells you that what we're talking about here saves you enormous time. So if you're in a rush, you want to save time. Yeah. you just have to work out that actually your velocity at the start could be slightly slower because you're building capability to save you time later.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a bit convoluted way of saying it, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Which is you're building the capacity because you know any team leader will tell you the difference between having a team that's aligned, that's delivering, that's supportive of the agenda versus the alternative. It's everything. It's so profound to your success.
And you worked in the private sector. Yeah. You now work in a great public service organisation in the commercial business. How do you transform and change in that environment? What colour or shades and colours does that give you in terms of being both? You want to be commercially driven, entrepreneurial, within the umbrella of being a great public service institution and organisation.
Yeah.
How does that change your approach, if anything?
Yeah, I think it does. It is a big factor in terms of my key shareholder is a public entity. Mm. I mean, not by design, but my career goes through very different revenue models. And the reason I mention the revenue models, because I think they shape a lot of it, okay? Which is, you know, in a public service entities with fixed budgets where you haven't got jeopardy around your short-term revenues.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you might have a spending round in government, you might have a license fee negotiation, but broadly speaking, you are not hustling over a year's numbers. You can do wonderful things. You can get headroom to do things that don't deliver necessarily on a P&L, but you also can get quite entrenched.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think cultural change in public institutions is an area that continually needs kind of energy, is an ongoing lifetime battle for people to kind of get that culture moving. And I think,
and you don't have the same in the way, on the one hand, you have perhaps in some cases more passion in terms of the end purpose sometimes.
Absolutely. No, I think you do.
And the problem, however, is you don't have a common bottom line to the same degree, which can be, so it's the flip side. You have, you know, an upside and a challenge.
Yeah, and you do have multivariable kind of success criteria because for the BBC, you have your public purposes. So, yeah, you might have a small service but does a brilliant job of supporting a small community of a certain musical interest. I used to run radio. And I would argue that supporting a minority music genre is absolutely critical in public service broadcasting. But others would argue, look, your only metric is reach. But no, it's value. And value is constructed in a multidimensional way. So I think that's quite hard. Now, coming to my business today, and a lot of where I work across a lot of entities, other things where, you know, you've got private funding, you've got public funding. The first thing I'd say is at the top level, the contradictions are often over-exaggerated because I think actually having clear values and purpose is a commercial asset. So a lot of people say to me, isn't it difficult? The BBC's kind of all public service. You're running an aggressive commercial business. Yeah. What's our biggest seller last year? It's Blue Planet 2. Okay, which was probably the finest example of high-end BBC programme you can get. So in a hyper-competitive market, isn't the fact we stand for and have programme makers who are driven by a sense of public value,
it's
our commercial asset. Yeah. I'm a kind of classic brand guy with Procter & Gamble training, PepsiCo training. Yeah. The first thing you look for is your brand differentiation. Mm. Our brand differentiation is we make the best programmes driven by public value, driven by British creativity. That's our shtick.
But that frame and that mindset, which is a sort of making the most of the asset and the benefits of the purpose is critical because you see different CEOs at different parts of their career and different parts of the transformation journey. You go in or in a growth mindset, positive mindset. Others are in the trenches, and frankly, if you can get a lot of toxicity around that. So having somebody who can see the benefits of being in the BBC or another public service organisation is refreshing and counter some of the challenge and cynicism.
I mean, it's not without. I mean, you know, I can gloss it, but it's, like all jobs, it's not without day to day where you know. You are your shareholders, in my case, sitting on the board of the BBC and the BBC Group. How do you reconcile, you know, what we need in the UK in terms of our TV windowing rights, all of that?
Now, and there's some real tensions and trade-offs,
You know, people say, you know, it must be hard doing that. I look at friends who are running PLCs or friends who have got private owners or CEOs of football clubs. You know, every model has responsibilities and complexities.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the game, isn't it? They're just different. They're different shape.
And looking at studios now, in some ways, you're trying to, I guess, balance the The integration, as you've talked about, you're trying to both keep the ongoing business day-to-day operating efficiently, smoothly, effectively, but also, if you like, creating the business of the future.
Yeah.
And to some degree, that degrees has some cannibalization, right?
Of, absolutely.
You know, from, you know, from non-digital to digital and so on.
Totally.
How do you, either yourself or your team, how do you balance the portfolio? Because on the one hand, you want to be driving the business effectively and efficiency, with efficiency, and you want to then drive the business in terms of growth. They often require different skills, different uses of capital. How do you think through those sort of trade-offs and choices?
It's a daily struggle. And I enjoy it, but we are seeing industries, as you and I know, being utterly reshaped.
Yes.
And what I mean by it is the obvious, which is, and it is the internet that did it. You know what I mean? Everywhere. And what it does is, in my world, clearly, we had a situation where it was very fixed and limited distribution. So a few channels, to state the obvious. Mm. And suddenly you have infinite choice. And in that, you see... And by the way, people get slightly irritated. I know when CEOs bring up their home situations and this, that, and the other. But I do think it's not for me, not my particular case. But I do think it's really people are seeing it in front of their eyes. This change in these markets.
I think that's okay. Not that I'm judging you here, but you're describing a picture.
I'm happy to be judged, David. Off you go. Yeah.
Far too dangerous.
Yeah.
But no, you're painting a picture as opposed to what I think a lot of C-suite or CEOs do, which is extrapolate their personal situation to the market, to the population.
Right. Which is very dangerous. Yeah, very dangerous. But the data, let's go there. The broader data is utterly clear. This market is moving extremely fast. And in that, I think what's fascinating is a double challenge in terms of what you were talking about in change. Not only do you have to change what you are as a business and what you do, but critically, and this is as big a challenge for the media businesses, is you may see that change, but the economic path from A to B looks extremely challenging.
Yes.
So in some ways, people will go, you know, where's the money? And it might not be that you go completely broke, but you certainly see massive margin dilution.
Yeah.
Or you see different shapes to use of capital, i.e. Yes. if the BBC wanted to go subscription video on demand around the world, you might be losing hundreds of millions of pounds for quite some time before you see light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is to help you through that choice. I think the first is the obvious, which is you need a culture that is free from defending the current business at all costs. I know that sounds a big point, but I think cultures, corporate cultures broadly, are all about risk aversion, and long-term corporations have basically delivered sustainable incremental growth by repeating the same activity.
Yeah.
Consumer businesses, media businesses, and it's comfortable. You get a good life, you get a bit of growth, and we've had that for decades.
Yes.
This massive technological shift is discombobulating for individuals in corporations that are, by and large, they're not entrepreneurs. You may be entrepreneurial, but you're not an entrepreneur if you're sitting in a corporation.
Yeah.
I can tell you, my neighbours who are entrepreneurs are all, you know, sold their houses, disappeared elsewhere. They're kind of throwing things up in the air in a way that most corporate individuals would not do.
Yes.
And I don't mean to be critical. What I'm trying to say is I think that individuals in corporations need to kind of get a bit more comfortable with being more uncomfortable. Slightly more risk, slightly more direct talking, not rudeness, generosity of spirit, nothing to do with that, you know, the ability to...
Saying what you think, saying what you feel.
Yeah, but...
Within a positive intent.
Really say, look, I honestly think this business is winding out. It's a very, very hard thing to do for a corporation to say, actually, this is no longer going to work.
How do you create a safe environment for people around you to do that? Because people talk about saying, "I'll be straight, say what you think, and so on." But there's often a fear culture, which may not be explicit, but is underneath, which is you don't want to be the person who says that the prize jewel, which has been amazing for years, actually is looking a bit.
It's very profound. And you know, how many corporate presentations do you sit there and you just feel you're at the worst case? I mean, I think most people are better than this now, but the information is sliced to give you a positive story. It's fatal. It's utterly fatal to culture. All I can say, David, no revelations here. I just think you need to say to people, look, just relax. Just relax. Tell me the truth. Tell me how it is, warts and all, what you really think. And it's difficult. It's really difficult for people in corporations. In my business, what it's meant is, you know, our core, we still have a very big business where we're selling finished television programs.
Yes.
But that is not a growth business over time. Because what's going to happen is there's still a huge market for that. But the truth is the value is really now up, what we call upstream. So it's up in owning IP, owning content. There's not a media CEO who won't tell you this. And yeah, if you look at companies, you know, like Disney buying Lucas, but film by buying Marvel, you know, these are the acquisitions that really seem to make sense in this market in terms of buying big IP, owning your content. And it is about the truth of that content, not the spin, by the way.
I mean, I've
dealt with a lot of things in my life. I tend to work in terms of crisis, this and the other. Things are misrepresented about, we've got to get the comms right. I tend to dismiss all of that. It is about the truth. What have you actually got here? And, you know, what we're doing is rapidly, I mean, we've bought a lot of production businesses. We have, you know, integrated the production business. My issue, though, is how the margin moves in that. And making sure my position in terms of rights and margin is secure as I affect that change. Am I moving fast enough? I think just about. But I would say I'm transforming the business, but even with huge effort, the whole team re-looking at what we need to do and in a better position in that we're not one of those businesses that's got so much legacy revenue that it's even harder. That we're able to do it. But I would just say it requires massive energy and the desire to really shape yourself around the market.
And can we just talk about the market? Because obviously you've talked about, you know, the BBC in terms of being, you know, your ultimate shareholder, you're on the exec board. You have a whole system and network of production companies, distributors, you have global players now who are both customers and potential competitors.
Indeed.
And you're transforming the business, but in some ways you want some of them to transform as well with you, to be part of it. How do you transform studios in a way where the system that you work in transforms it in the right way? Because I do see some CEOs do a great job with their own business and then all the different networks they have, suppliers, the supply chain effectively, the Ken customers, they don't quite get the story. They don't quite get the hand changing.
How do you
keep it all?
It's all about partnership. I think people need to know exactly what you stand for and your values. I mean, we are about the best British creativity applied globally. Actually, you have to articulate very clearly what you're not. So we're not interested in buying production companies around the world for the sake of it. We're not going to be buying things that are outside our scope. This is the value we add. The other thing is defining that purpose and scope in a way that is not linked to one historical revenue shape. So we are not a digital company. Wow. We're not a mobile company. We're not a channels company. We're a content company. Mm. Okay. Now that is a hokey line because everyone's using it in media, but it's true. In our case, we are about content and IP. I do think there are editorial implications of screen size and length or broad of your programming. But broadly speaking, we are creating content which can go anywhere. So you reorientate the business. You need a vision of the business that is not dependent on a defensive retrenchment around what is essentially a declining distribution channel model. Yeah. And, you know, I'm lucky in this way because other businesses totally dependent on TV, linear TV advertising. Mm. That's harder over time.
I think you say that others, you say they're content companies, they may be, but actually look at their activities, they're not. Only
right.
Second, it's very rare, as you say, for execs to call out what they're not going to become, because that requires a certain degree of, firstly, clarity. Mm. Secondly, requires, I think, a bit of humility to say, oh, actually, we can't be everything. You know, we're an amazing company.
We were running live events. We had, you know, a few people working on a Doctor Who game in LA, bluntly, and I just said, forget it. We are not going to, as a 1.5 billion entity, we're not going to take. You know, the way to do this is partner with the right games companies. I don't want to be an event execution company. Someone else can do that better than me.
Yeah, and it's a different capability.
And I can treble the size of the business within the scope I've defined. But I think there's almost too much choice out there in this world, isn't there, in terms of all the opportunities. It's very easy to chase shadows. Yeah. And also, the other thing is, and it is scary for CEOs, I think, which is you get that argument, don't you, that we've got to be in this because if we're not, we could get left behind.
It's like a rush.
And everyone's, I mean, and I feel that. I've got to try this. And you see it all the time. People buying, you know, you see, think about the new media companies that have been bought, content companies, you know, others. I won't name names.
But, and people on boards tend to ask the questions, oh, I've heard about this. Come on, why are you not
doing... you've got to be in this area. Yeah. There is a degree of truth in that, but not you know, spreading yourself to a point where you've lost your focus. And I think that's my worry.
So picturing your daily life, whether taking a typical day or a week and so on, what are the moments that you absolutely love, genuinely love, and the moments where you find it difficult? You talked about some difficulties in terms of sort of slowing down. What do you love?
I like most of it. Because I think if you don't, it's supposed to be kind of twee about it, but if you haven't got energy for kind of all of it, then, you know, I really think that I come from a philosophical point of view, if you like, which is, I'm blooming lucky. So the first thing, David, is having dealt with also a lot of crisis in terms of not personal crisis, in terms of corporate crisis, I think this relativity point is really important. So you get people going, oh, this is the end of the world. You go, well, no, it isn't the end of the world. So I tend to be quite positive about the whole thing. And I don't want to be twee about it because I have my dark moments. But I think in terms of the things that give you real joy in my life, and absolutely one of the things I've done is move to businesses and organisations where there's purpose, there's a creative spirit at the heart of it. You know, I the real thing that gives me absolute amazing pleasure is to get to the obvious, which is get to the front line, see actors doing their business or being behind the stage at the Proms when I was running BBC Radio and looking at a world famous pianist warming up, doing a, you know, Beethoven piano concerto. And I'm not at the time, actually, a bit better now, but didn't know classical music that well. And literally had, in effect, a degree course running Radio 3. And I had the finest musicians in the world in front of me. And that is humbling. Yes. I think it's when you see people that have got real talents that are genuinely different to you, and you can see them and go, I just can't even fathom how you do that. I could just never do it. And that's, I think that for people who've got a lot of kind of big jobs, and actually to see people with genuinely different talents that they can then say, I can't do that. Is you know, there's a broader learning there for me on that, which is really important.
No, that's wonderful.
The more stressful times are really when you get, you know, the BBC is very in the public eye.
Yes.
And when I look at crisis management, I always think around velocity and then truth. What's the truth and what speed are we moving at? And velocity to me, when it's moving faster to a point when you really feel you're not in control. I've had that a few times. Yeah. And I suppose we could relate this to the broader conversation, which is when the velocity of the market is moving faster than the truth of your business, that's when stress, you know, genuine doubt and stress becomes problematic.
Yeah, I can see that.
And so that's the situations when I felt a bit, frankly, unhappy.
How do you recover?
It's a good question, actually. I haven't really thought about that. I do vary pace quite a lot. Although I'm quite kind of
interval
fast.
Training, that's what they say in running.
I certainly don't believe you have to be busy all day. I think the one good thing about the British weather is it gives us a safety topic when we bump into each other. The new safety topic is almost a boast of, I'm really hectic, I'm really busy. You know, I kind of think when we met just now before this, you know, oh yeah, I'm really busy. I mean, it's become our norm, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Yeah.
And then you've got the phone situation, which is, you know, you can't walk more than 20 yards without, you know, looking at it. I do tell my senior team, you know, don't worry, just go off to a coffee shop for 2 hours and chill out and think. I really believe it, by the way. I just don't think that this whole busy thing is because if I relate, I don't relate it to, you know, kind of laziness. I mean, you know, the idea that, you know, modern executives now that, you know, you can work at home, you can do whatever. In some ways, you've got to hire people where you've got the intensity of work is trusted. That's a given. If
you've
got an issue
trust,
with that,
isn't it? You have to trust the people.
It's all trust.
And respect the people who work and think in different ways. Where do you then get inspiration for? You're working with great people.
Yeah.
Right across from the people on, you know, right from the front, from the pianists and the, you know, the radio, but the creatives all the way up. But where do you get your best ideas from? How do you, because you're in a market where you have to make difficult choices.
Yeah.
You also have to pivot the organisation, and you are doing that. Yeah. Where do you get your inspiration from?
Quite a decent network of people who have just got real massive experience, but have never drifted to bitterness. Because I think a lot, you know, what I mean by that, sorry, that's a bit loaded, but what I mean by that is you get a lot of people who've been around the situation, and they kind of, if it only happened in the way I used to do it, or I've got, there's a lot of baggage there. I actually really love, you know, a small group of people who remain energetic, curious, positive, but have got deep experience. That's the blend I'm looking for. I will give you an example that someone will all know, which is David Attenborough. He is 92, yeah? And he is still fiercely curious about innovation, what's going to happen to the next level of 4K, what should we do with the next super HD, how do we present the oceans, what do we do about honestly, I get exhausted spending time, which is a huge privilege. And if you go to talk to him, he is still fascinated by it all, but has incredible experience. Now, from an executive point of view, you don't want to be going to into a situation where you just get demotivated by it. I would just be very honest about it. You want people who bring that curiosity. Yeah. And I've got a few of them.
But they're your network.
I have a network. And they're also free from the date. They don't need to say anything that is particularly popular. Do you know what I mean by that? They're unencumbered.
Yeah. That unencumbered point is a good way, because what I take from this conversation is one, the sense of purpose you have in terms of what you're trying to do in studios, but also making sure that there is a degree, there is a degree of process in terms of how you bring the best ideas through, how you make decisions, how you move forward.
Yeah, I think life is riven by false paradoxes. Absolutely, people go, oh, is that type of person or that type of business? And we have it a lot in our lives, which is drama, in a period drama, has to be this, or literally, in editorially, this type of program. Actually, the programs that have leapt into a different dimension tend to be ones that meet on the boundaries of genre or would never. I mean, the biggest show in the UK was a baking show. Yeah. Ballroom dancing has created a £1 billion business over the years.
Who
would have thought it? Every single, leap is a surprise, and surprises don't come from that more conventional, it's either this or this. My industry is riven with it, because whenever you pitch a film, you go, well, this one's a cross between Mission Impossible and Spider-Man or whatever. It's new stuff that really excites me in that.
Yeah, and you have to create that fertile ground where people can come forward with balmy ideas.
Yeah, that is work in progress. I haven't done enough of that in my career. I think I constantly am interested in what that strange alchemy of what actually generates those types of ideas.
It's been a privilege chatting to you, learning from you, Tim.
Strategy in Business is a trademark of PwC. Copyright 2018 PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the PwC network and or one or more of its member firms, each of which is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. No reproduction is permitted in whole or part without written permission of PwC.